From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Monday, July 22nd. Coming up, we'll learn about how some parents in rural, majority white areas of Illinois are seeing the value of diversity education. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Some locals were surprised by President Joe Biden's decision to drop out of the 2024 presidential election. Manur Jamali is a Democrat and a senior at the University of Illinois. Jamali thinks Biden made the right choice stepping down because he isn't doing a good job appealing to his voters. But she doesn't think he made the right choice by endorsing his vice president, Kamala Harris.
I don't think she's done anything substantial as her role as vice president. As for who I think would be a better fit, there's not really a name that comes to mind or someone that has gained enough popularity or has strong enough stances, in my opinion.
Jamali is planning to vote in November. The funeral for a 36-year-old Springfield woman shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy was held on Friday. Mawa Iqbal was there.
Sonia Massey's father, James Wilburn, spoke at Friday's funeral.
The last words out of my baby's mouth is I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. And there's no doubt in my mind that my baby is resting in the arms of Jesus.
Massey had called 911 earlier this month to report a possible intruder when then-Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson came to her home and shot her. Body camera footage of that night will be released Monday morning. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
Northwestern University police have arrested and charged four educators months after they supported student protesters at the Palestinian Solidarity encampment on campus. Lisa Corian Phillip reports.
Josh Hahn is a librarian at Northwestern and one of four individuals recently charged with obstructing law enforcement at the encampment in late April.
Northwestern waited over 2 months to make these arrests and file these charges under the cover of summer when students aren't here, people aren't paying attention as much. The timing makes it seem like Northwestern wants to take action but not have any accountability for their actions.
The university says it will not comment on individual cases. In a statement, a spokesperson said the school supports peaceful demonstration, but not the harassment of community members. Lisa Corian Phillip, WBEZ News.
Still to come, we'll learn about how some parents in rural majority white areas of Illinois are seeing the value of diversity education. That story is coming up next on 217 Today.
Next time on The 21st Show, President Biden is endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris to take his place on the ballot. What do you think of his decision to step aside? Should Harris be the nominee? And how do you think this will affect the election? Leave a message at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. Then join us on The 21st Show.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. When Illinois lawmakers expanded the Black history lessons required to be taught in public schools, part of the goal was building empathy among non-Black students. Chicago Representative LaShawn K. Ford helped pass the law in 2021. At the time, he said people wanted more education on who Black people were before they were enslaved. Most Illinois schools are majority white, and that's especially true in rural areas. This week, we're learning how a teacher is tackling both race and sexuality in a rural classroom. IPM's education reporter Emily Hayes has more.
In 5.8 miles, the destination is on your right, Cuba Senior High School.
Cuba, Illinois is in the western part of the state. At one time, there were a lot of mining and factory jobs here. Now the surrounding county's biggest industry is educational and social services. According to the 2020 census, over 1,100 residents live here, and 95% of them are white.
Our population jumped to 2,000. It's the only time in a census where we ever got to 2,000.
That's Joe Brewer. He teaches history and social science at Cuba's high school.
And then look what happened 10 years later, 1920. We go from 68.5% growth, never seen that before, to all of a sudden 26.5% decline, like in one census.
On this day in mid-March, Brewer is talking his class through the evidence for whether their town was welcoming to African Americans in the 1920s. He shows them notes from James Lowen, one of the country's top experts on sundown towns. These were places where African Americans were warned to leave before nightfall. The census irregularity is what brought him to Cuba.
He wrote this word. This is his conclusion. What are we?
Probable.
Okay, if you're in a like murder trial and you're finding out, did Cameron commit the murder, right? And the jury comes back and they says, probable. He probably did.
Lowen has since passed away, but others have picked up where he left off, including former Southern Illinois University sociology professor Jessica Crow. She says some sundown towns drove out existing Black residents and others set up formal or informal laws warning new Black migrants from the South not to settle in.
People who live there still remember the signs that were posted on the edge of the town, city limits. And these signs would say different things, but they all had the same theme where they would, you know, say that the racial group, do not let the sun set down on your head in this town.
Crow grew up in a documented sundown town, Pena, Illinois, where five Black miners were killed in riots in 1899 and other Black residents were expelled. The town is still 97% white, and she barely learned about race in school.
You know, you go to college and you're like, oh gosh, there's all these people that are not white, right? And it's like, how do I interact in that social setting? Like, how do I not offend people, right? And I made some big mistakes.
Crow says she used words no one had ever told her were offensive. She corrected her mistake afterwards, but wishes she had learned more when she was younger. So is the assumption behind Illinois' laws mandating more inclusive history right? Can education prevent racism? Canadian psychology professor Elora Dannon-Efimoff says yes. She published a study last year on experiments conducted with introduction to psychology students.
We found that, you know, any type of learning was better than no learning.
Over the span of a few months, the students did show more knowledge about Indigenous people and were more empathetic towards them. At least in Canada, she says learning about racism as a system that advantages white people over Indigenous people worked better over time than learning about racism as a negative bias against a group of people.
We're centralizing racism within a person as something, you know, abnormal about that person who holds racist attitudes or racist beliefs. So that helps us to kind of ignore the system. And it also helps participants to go, well, I'm not racist.
But over time, participants did forget some of the knowledge they had learned and lost some of the empathy they had gained. Efimoff says long-term learning, like lessons over multiple years in school, is necessary to prevent that loss. That's why Joe Brewer has high hopes for his students.
Democracy should be born anew in each generation. What do they want school to look like? What do they want these communities that are really struggling, that are aging, what do they want these communities to look like? Here's what you guys are going to do. This is the central...
Class is ending, and Brewer gives them some homework. He wants them to weigh Cuba's history as a probable sundown town against other evidence, like its previous location within the Underground Railroad that helped enslaved people to freedom.
Can you help us solve this mystery? Like, there's no consensus on it. Where were we during the Great Migration? Were we part of the communities that welcome people?
After class, junior Samantha Thumb is considering the question. She thinks Cuba may have been relatively welcoming.
I think compared to other places in Illinois, maybe we were, but I don't really know if really anybody was welcoming then, especially like, you know, just white people. Like at that time, it was just hard to find welcoming white people.
She says it's important to learn uncomfortable histories about race.
So if white people, for example, who have been the ones that put African Americans in that position, if they feel uncomfortable, then they won't want it to happen again. And so I think making them uncomfortable is kind of what prevents it from us making that mistake again.
So being uncomfortable is really important.
Yes.
You think it's a good thing.
Yes. I mean, you learn about the Holocaust in school, and of course it makes you uncomfortable just hearing about all the terrible things that happened to these people, these innocent people. Of course it's going to make you uncomfortable, but that's why we learn about it.
Illinois law also requires teachers to focus on another topic that's not in standard textbooks.
As far as like LGBTQ history, there is none.
We'll have more on that story tomorrow. I'm Emily Hayes with Illinois Public Media.
For more on this story and to see photographs from Cuba High School, go to ipmnewsroom.org. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says today will be partly cloudy with a high of 83 degrees. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by May Antar, Mawa Iqbal, Lisa Kurian-Phillip, and Emily Hayes. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.